It's Tuesday, April 17th, 2018, and here's your update. Amazon warehouse workers are allegedly peeing in bottles, fearing punishment for taking breaks. Bloggers ask, is it time to rebuild the web? Ketamine has been found to have fast-acting benefits for depression. Over 65,000 home routers are proxying bad traffic for botnets. A developer shares their experience of submitting a progressive web application to 3 app stores. ReactOS releases a new version with experimental Windows Vista 7 and 10 compatibility. And in fundraising and acquisition news, Earn.com joins Coinbase. And finally, General Assembly sells to Adecco for $413 million. This is Hacker Daily, a new daily podcast for hackers.
Business Insider reports that many workers in Amazon warehouses are so afraid of being penalized for taking long breaks that they have resorted to peeing in bottles. Amazon is known to track their workers' output and issue warnings to those unable to meet their target goals. An author, James Bloodworth, went undercover at an Amazon warehouse and, quote, found that the warehouse's fulfillment workers had a toilet bottle system in place because the bathrooms were too sparse to get to quickly. Business Insider additionally reports on the results of a survey conducted by Organize, which found that almost 3/4 of UK fulfillment center staff members were afraid of using the toilet because of concerns about time. One survey respondent said, "You have to pack 2 products per minute. You do not have time to drink water because going to the toilet every evening sends messages to the scanner with the target and tells you to hurry." HN user Arland commented, "Sometimes I look at society as a complete organ with a hypothetical ability to make cohesive decisions for itself. And I think it is making extremely self-destructive choices, all for the sake of satisfying the urge to buy more at lower prices with more convenience." Amazon disputed the allegations in a statement to Business Insider, saying, "Amazon provides a safe and positive workplace for thousands of people across the UK with competitive pay and benefits from day one."
Mike Lucadis, writing on O'Reilly.com, says that it's time to rebuild the web. He's referencing another post by Anil Dash, CEO of Glitch, who outlines a few key components of the web which have decayed over the years and would promote a less top-heavy internet in which only a few players dominate the landscape. These components include viewing the source of a page or a mobile app to encourage creators to learn how to build by copying code, tools to author web content not intermediated by a third party like Facebook or Instagram, composing web applications via embedding, distributing content you authored directly from a website you own rather than via posting on a social news feed a third party owns. Lucadis addresses his own biases in rebuilding the web and endorses Dash's views, stating, "I've written several times about rebuilding the internet, but I've generally assumed the rebuild will need peer-to-peer technologies. While many of the technologies I'd use already exist, rebuilding the web around blockchains and onion routing would require a revolution in user interface design to have a chance. In contrast, Dash's missing building blocks are fundamentally simple." He further explores the idea of reviving RSS technology as a tool to work around the dominance of players like Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, writing, "If we're going to rebuild the net, we'll probably be better off choosing simple rather than bright, shiny, and complex technologies. Could someone build an RSS reader that made the web of independent sites as approachable as Facebook? I don't see why not. And users would have complete control over what they see." Hacker News user Random Search comments about the story, "I don't believe the problem lies in any technology. We don't need blockchain, it's not JavaScript minification, it isn't the centralization of services that are the problem. It's the business model. No amount of tech is going to change that. If you want to change the situation, start social media businesses with a different business model."
BBC News reports that ketamine has fast-acting benefits for depression. Ketamine has long been known as a party drug, but a recent U.S. study conducted by Janssen Research and Development, a Johnson & Johnson company, finds that ketamine shows promise as a treatment for depression. The subjects of the study were 68 people at high risk of suicide actively being treated with antidepressants and a hospital stay. Half of the patients were additionally given esketamine, a component of the ketamine molecule, via a nasal spray, while the other half were given a placebo. The patients given esketamine showed a marked improvement during the first 4 weeks of treatment, though by day 25 the effects had leveled off. While studies on ketamine's use in treating depression have been conducted in the past, this was the first of its kind conducted by a drug company, and the first to administer the drug via a nasal spray. Professor Mithul Mehta of King's College said of the technique, "It enters the body relatively quickly. It's not as fast as going straight into your bloodstream, but not as slow as via the stomach, and it's reasonably easy to control how much you give to a person. In that respect, this is a really important study." Many HN commenters had direct knowledge of ketamine's utility in treating depression, but also commented on potential downsides. Rinsebrain commented, "After a couple of months of periodic booster treatments, over the course of a week, I felt it completely drain out of me, and no variance or repetition of ketamine treatments has been able to reproduce it since. It was possibly the single worst experience of my life, feeling that slip away, and now having recent, crystal clear memories of how much that fog had been complicating my life." HN user PW added, "The only downside is the cost. It's not covered by insurance, and the potential that there are long-term side effects that have yet to be discovered. We pay $375 for a 40-minute infusion. The recommended initial course is 6 infusions over 2 weeks. After that, a booster or two is usually needed every 2 to 6 weeks."
Bleeping Computer reports that botnet operators and cyber espionage groups are abusing the universal plug-and-play protocol that comes with modern routers to proxy bad traffic and hide their real location from investigators. The data comes from a new report by Akamai. They say the method is an active vector currently in use to conceal the traffic of attackers, and they found over 65,000 home routers proxying this traffic. Akamai advises that all internet providers and law enforcement need to be aware of the vulnerability, as end users and customers may appear to be hosting content or launching attacks when the responsible party is actually behind one or more layers of compromised routers. Identifying compromised or vulnerable routers isn't easy unless the owner can find and audit the router's NAT tables, a task that's out of reach of almost all home and small business owners. To help users, Akamai has compiled a list of routers which they suspect may be vulnerable to the attacks. Commenter Sukoto asks, "What specific steps should we be doing to ensure a home router is configured safely?" George replies, "Disable universal plug-and-play in the router settings. In theory, that should close the hole. You should also disable remote maintenance and web access. Many router web UIs have exploitable flaws that can be used to bypass password authentication. Ensure that you are always running the latest firmware version. If there are no up-to-date versions or the router is too old, you might complain to your internet service provider."
Developer Judah Gabriel wrote up a summary of his experience posting a progressive web app, or PWA, to Google Play, the iOS App Store, and the Windows Store. Progressive web apps are apps built for the web, which can also be used natively or on mobile. Traditionally, developers need to build separate software packages for web apps and native apps, but progressive web apps attempt to serve both with a single package. Gabriel addresses some of the barriers to entry of creating a PWA in his blog post, including the ability to add native functionality to apps using web libraries. While Android addresses the problem reasonably well, their adherence to JavaScript standards is unusual. The iOS App Store, on the other hand, required the use of an external library. The process of registering and paying for the app to be listed in the 3 different app stores is cumbersome and fragmented. And, while Windows has streamlined the process of packaging up a PWA, Apple requires an Xcode project to wrap up the PWA, while Google requires a Java app wrapper. Some HN users viewed the friction in a positive light. User Shinraditor wrote, "From a user perspective, this is why I love iOS. Software development is already very, very easy. the barrier to wide distribution is almost nothing. This is an extremely developer-centric perspective, which is fair, but at the end of the day, your users pay the bills, and it's hard to be developer-first without also being user-hostile. HN user Mankosh666 made the counterpoint, the free market and users are completely capable of choosing quality apps. iOS and Apple needn't babysit.
ReactOS, the free and open-source operating system based on the Windows NT architecture, released a new version with experimental Windows Vista, Windows 7, and Windows 10 software compatibility. Hacker News commenter Owen Versteed writes, "This has been one of my favorite software projects to watch because it's such an insanely monumental undertaking and moves so damn slowly. There were people working on this 2 decades ago, putting in tiny fixes and little bits of code and whatnot. And they did it even knowing that basically nobody would see their work for decades, but that doesn't discourage them. Meanwhile, work keeps going on in the background. So many untold man hours of thankless work going into the project, and the vast majority of that hard work with no payoff for years. This is one of the most important software projects in history. My hat is off to the ReactOS developers, and congratulations on the latest release." Rocky1138 writes, "What I like about this project, besides the dedication and professionalism of the team behind it, is that it offers PC gamers a possible way to play Windows-era games moving forward. In a decade or two, we likely won't be able to activate a Windows XP machine, and wouldn't want to with all the security hazards either. So it's great to have a free and open-source project to run our Windows stuff." Brad Feld, the VC founder of TechStars and Foundry Group, shared a post called "The Price of Free is Actually Too High." Feld builds on an article from Tristan Harris in New York Magazine called "The Internet Apologizes," in which Harris writes, "We cannot afford the advertising business model. The price of free is actually too high. It is literally destroying our society because it incentivizes automated systems that have these inherent flaws." Cambridge Analytica is the easiest way of explaining why that's true. Because that wasn't an abuse by a bad actor. That was the inherent platform. The problem with Facebook is Facebook. Feld writes, "We are getting a first taste of how difficult it is for a world in which humans and computers are intrinsically linked. I think this is a pivotal moment for humans. I've heard the cliche, the genie can't be put back in the bottle, numerous times over the past few weeks. Any reader of Will and Ariel Durant know that the big transitions are hard to see when you're in them, but easy to see with the benefit of decades of hindsight. This might be that moment of transition where there is no going back to what was before." User DR Chu comments, "I find whenever I consider the alternative to free, I need to examine deep within myself to ask if I'd be willing to pay for the half a dozen services or so that I use every day for free, subsidized currently by an advertising model. Although the idea would be great if companies existed solely to serve people like myself for free, it isn't realistic. Weighing the cost of free versus the potential loss of privacy at some point in the future, I can't help but choose free today and kick the proverbial privacy can down the road. Thus, I'm a bit hesitant to go find my pitchfork in this fight for privacy." In fundraising and acquisition news, Coinbase acquired Earn.com, the blockchain startup formerly known as 21.co that allows senders to pay users in digital currency for replying to emails and completing tasks. Balaji Srinivasan, the co-founder and CEO of Earn, is joining Coinbase as the company's first chief technical officer. Finally, TechCrunch reports that the European human resources services company Adecco Group said that it is acquiring the New York-based programming design and management training startup General Assembly for $413 million. General Assembly started as a co-working space in New York's Flatiron District in 2011, and grew into a global learning company with campuses in 20 cities and tens of thousands of graduates worldwide. TechCrunch reports that, over time, General Assembly became less of a consumer-facing business and transitioned into one that was serving primarily business clients, which means access to Adecco Group's over 100,000 businesses is a big boon to the company's continued expansion plans. Commenter Lucky Data writes, "I witnessed the quality of education provided in the areas of design and product management, and I wasn't impressed. To me, GA felt like a predatory business that provided a very superficial veneer of legitimacy to extremely unqualified candidates. The good ones going in would be well served by the networking, but people that didn't know anything about the field would crash and burn at their first contact with the reality of the industry. Bob Alexis wrote that the acquisition, quote, seems cheap. I did some digital marketing courses there. The classes are more on the basic side, but certainly a good intro for some basics in programming and digital business. That's all for Hacker Daily today, Tuesday, April 16th, 2018. As we've mentioned before, we're running Hacker Daily as a minimum viable podcast, and we want to make it better every day. So we'd love to hear your feedback. You can reach us via email at info@hackerdaily.co, follow us on Twitter @HackerDailyCo, and we'll be back tomorrow with more stories. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.